Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Following On with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Surrey Director of Cricket Alex Stewart has announced he'll step down from his role at the end of 2024. We'll hear from the great man himself and get the thoughts of Surrey head coach Gareth Batty. We'll get Harmy's take on whether his former teammate and close friend Andrew Flintoff can make the step up and become the next England head coach. And we'll hear exclusively from Durham wicketkeeper Ollie Robinson as they prepare for the first season back in Division 1 of the County Championship. ESPN Quick Info Assistant Editor Matt Roller joins us to reflect on the 100th draft. It's Jason Roy and David Warner both go unsold. And Derbyshire head of cricket Mickey Arthur will reflect on the news that Mohammad Amir won't be signing for the club as he targets a return to international cricket with Pakistan. So plenty to come over the next hour. This is Following On. And just before we chat about your mate, Flintoff, I would like to point out to listeners and viewers that I am not at home. I am on the road. I'm on tour. And therefore, I'm not in my own studio, so if I'm sounding a bit flaky, it's not just a couple of wines last night, it's the quality of the microphone. Apologies for that. Harmy, Nathan, a lot of talk, isn't there, about Andrew Flintoff becoming an England coach. This was Rob Key speaking to the Daily Telegraph a couple of days ago. Without question, he said, I think he would be an excellent head coach. Who knows where he ends up in the future? He will be a worthy candidate going forward when that time comes, and whoever is in the job, and it might be outside of my time, they would be stupid not to look at him. Flintoff is a leader like Stokes. Such is the momentum with Freddie Flintoff at the moment that it seems almost inevitable that he'll take over from Matthew Mott.
Yeah, it seems that way. I feel sorry for Matthew Mott in a way because he's done not a great deal wrong, but just everybody wants Freddie back and wants Freddie in charge. He is a leader. I thought it was a great article Rob Key did with the Telegraph. I think it was Nick Holt he did it with. I spoke to him. I was with him the night he did the article. It came out the next day. You know, I had dinner with Keezy and it was a family catch-up more than anything else. And the way he talked about Andrew in the article, it's common sense. The guy, he is a leader. Freddie is a leader. He's brilliant in the dressing room. That's his forte. When he's in the dressing room, he's got an audience. And when Andrew's, he's an entertainer. And when he's got an audience, but he speaks brilliantly about cricket. They've got this character of, the man who loves to entertain. And we went off for 10 years and did a hell of a lot of different stuff in the sort of entertainment world. But cricket's his passion. Cricket's his knowledge. His knowledge of cricket's unbelievable. And in a dressing room, there's not a better person in a dressing room because he's got empathy. He understands what other people are going through if they're having tough times. He knows what it's like to be, the great all-rounder like Ben Stokes and have the team. I think the team's, will behind him, but also the pressure of being, not the best player in the team, but being the man that's going to drive the team forward. And I think he thrives on that sort of pressure and he wants that pressure. So, yes, I think the natural progression would be for Andrew to head coach. He's doing the Superchargers. It will not surprise me in time if he is coach of England, but I think it'll be after Rob Key's time. I think Freddie, I think Andrew would love to coach for Rob Key, but I think his natural progression through the coaching system, I think, might be just beyond when Rob Key, you know, possibly leaves the role. So I think it's a watch this space. But if England, you know, crash and burn and have a shocker in the T20 World Cup, like they did in the 50-over World Cup, then there might be a decision to make on Matthew Mott's future. And is Andrew, would Andrew be ready to do the job? I'm sure he will. So I think that's the, you know, that's the million-dollar question. It's when, not if.
You know, it's so important, isn't it, for international coaches to have a sense of perspective on life, Harmy. And we also need to redefine the word coach. And people are thinking that you're not coaching basic skills here. What you're doing is providing a sense of perspective and creating an environment in which players can perform without fear at their very best. And it's a strange thing to say, but if a player's getting a bit tense and a bit down on himself, the fact that Freddie would be able to say, listen, mate, it's not a matter of life and death. I've been there.
Absolutely. He's covered a hell of a lot of, you know, bases in his time, ticks a lot of boxes when it comes to what he went through as a player, as a personality, and more importantly, as a person. So, you know, he's had some tough times. He's had some, you know, really, really tough times. And, you know, the accident on Top Gear will probably put life into perspective for him. If it wasn't for that accident, Andrew wouldn't be in cricket. He wouldn't be in cricket. You know, you wouldn't see him in the game, which has always been a shame because his knowledge of the game is fantastic. He loves the game of cricket. You know, he was just very good at entertaining people, and he got paid a hell of a lot more people for entertaining than he did for anything you would do in the coaching world. So when people ask, you know, did you see this coming? Of course I did. Cricket's been his life. You know, cricket is what made, you know, the character Freddie Flintoff. But I think the coach, Andrew, the person that I know, will be brilliant because, like you say, in a dressing room, he inspires people. You know, he makes people feel easy. He makes people feel comfortable, and he can give people inspiration when he's in there just by, you know, a quiet word or, you know, just a, you know, a quick quip of a joke. That's what he'd be good at. So creating an environment, I think, in international cricket, like we've seen with McCullum. You know, what's Brendan McCullum done? Technically, don't think he does any coaching. He's created an environment where people can thrive from, and that for me is what Andrew Flintoff would be as a coach. And I fully expect him to, you know, go into that role now because, you know, of what's happened to him in life from an entertainment point of view. I think he's now enjoying the coaching side of it, and let's see where it goes. It'd be great to see.
Right. Well, let's move on to the county championship then. And it starts in less than 2 weeks' time, and weather permitting. That's a bizarre thought. But Durham will be back in Division One, of course, after romping to the Division Two title last year. First time back, actually, since 2016. And ahead of the new season, their wicketkeeper batsman, Ollie Robinson, and I do think he should change his name to Oliver, while there are two Ollie Robinsons about. Anyway, he was speaking to TalkSport's Jack Cunningham.
First of all, how was the tour of India with the Lions?
Yeah, it was very good, thanks. It was a tough challenge at times, being in the same hotel, going to the same ground for 26 out of 30 days. And it does take its toll mentally and physically, but like we went there to try and get something out of it, a result, and went there to win. Unfortunately, we didn't, but we also learnt a lot as a group.
Has this given you the bug when it comes to national cricket?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of why we play the game. As a kid, you want to play for England, and yeah, obviously you want that higher honours, but everyone knows that you've got to do it at county level to get earn the right to do that.
Last year, you recorded a strike rate of 88.66, scoring three centuries along the way. This seems very Bazball. Is England Test team on your mind yet?
I mean, if it happens, it happens, but it's not. I'm not going to put pressure on myself to for that to be the be-all and end-all this year. I mean, it's probably going to be changes from everything you read in the media, but I don't know whether that includes the keeping situation, what they do with that. But like I said, I think it's just a case of you bide your time and wait to see what happens.
How do you feel ending the new campaign personally?
I'm really excited about this year. I think we've got a real good chance of doing something special as a group. I think we kind of put the foundations in place last year, and we're going to back what we did last year and carry on doing that this year. We've spoken a lot about it not being Division One; it's the county championship, and actually, in theory, we finished 11th last year, so actually we turn up to every game. It's another 4-day game of cricket. Anyone can beat anyone. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
Fantastic. I mean, to be honest, kind of leads on my next question. What's the mood in the squad and what are your aims this season?
I think our aim is to win it. I think, class. Why not? Essex did it a few years ago when they came up. Won Div 1 straight away. And we've got a real good squad this year. We've got a lot of competition for places. We've got a great group of bowlers. Batters probably won't like me saying it, but bowlers win your games and win your championships. And we've got that in abundance with Carsey, Potsey, Rainey and Boland and so on.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on like franchise cricket, you know, going around the world, getting opportunities to play sort of all over the world, make money and, I don't know, I guess experience new things, or you've mainly just focused on just Durham for now and England and like county championship and stuff like that?
Yeah, I love my Red Bull cricket. I've always said from the start my dream is to play Test cricket. The only franchise stuff I've been involved in is the Superchargers, really. So I kind of had a little bit of a taste of that. And actually being... I realised it this winter. I was away for 13 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be away from home. And like it can be tough, I reckon, on a lot of people. So I think the odd competition would be good. But the whole winter is a long time to be away from home. And yeah, it's brilliant that you make all this money. But you see more and more so now people pulling out of competitions for mental health reasons or to get a better balance in their life, and yeah, I completely get that.
And finally, what would constitute a successful season for you by the end of the campaign?
For me, I want to contribute to wins for Durham, and I think if I can do that, then I put myself in a good place and I put the team in a good place. So I think the more you buy into the team culture and the more you buy into the team ethos of do it for the team, I think everything else takes care of itself.
That was wicketkeeper batter from Durham, Ollie Robinson, talking to Jack Cunningham. And Harmy, it's not just conceivable. I think that Durham are amongst the favourites to go back to back Division One, Division Two, and Division One. But I tell you what, it's going to be a heck of a title race, or could be, should be. Surrey, Durham, Lancashire, Hampshire, Essex. All five, and I'm probably missing a couple of challengers.
Yeah, it's going to be a great championship. I think it's going to be. I think it's what this is what I think a lot of people want from first class cricket. When you look at the sides that's in that division now, I know you know the high performance review that Sir Andrew Strauss did, talking about less cricket, less teams, more competition. I think we're slowly but surely getting a first division championship now, and the title race will be brilliant. It really will. I'm really looking forward to Red Bull cricket this year. And Durham have got a great chance. They really have, because they've got a bowling attack. You know, Essex have got a way and a method of taking 20 wickets through Simon Harmer and Cook and, you know, people like that. Hampshire the same, with the three fast bowlers they've got. Surrey, you know, a huge pool of talented players. And Lancashire are a good side as well. So the Durham one for me is... they've got players about to play for England, and that is always, it's great to see, which, and what I mean by that is the first test match squad, when it gets announced against West Indies at Lord's, there will be a couple of new faces, I would imagine, and the likelihood is they'll be from Durham, you know, whether the wicketkeeper, that's up for grabs, there'll be at least two fast bowlers up for grabs, because the World T20 finishes not long before, so I can't imagine the players that are playing in that, playing in the first test. So the likes of Brian Carson and Matt Potts, there's a good chance they'll be playing in and around the squad for Lords. So they'll be wanting for the first 6-7 games to, you know, hit the ground running. And I mentioned them too because they took a lot of wickets for the Lions, and they were a real success story for the Lions. And Ollie Robinson was that as well. So because of that, throw in Alex Lees at the top of the order, David Bellingham's had a great winter, making his international debut and scoring runs. Durham are the real deal, and I think Durham could be the one that might just upset the Alex Stewart farewell party at the Oval. If anybody's going to beat Surrey this year, I think it might be Durham.
Yeah, it depends on call-ups and fitness, doesn't it, really? But, yeah, I mean, if they have their players available and they stay fit, I think that the bowling attack is probably the strongest in the championship. Right, you're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And a reminder, you can now watch us on YouTube as well. Just head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and subscribe. Now then, just before we hear from Gareth Batty, let's hear from the great man himself. This was Alex Stewart announcing his immediate future.
probably the toughest decision I've had to make in my working life. People may know, you know, my wife has suffered with cancer for the last 11, 12 years or whatever it may be. And I've always said I owe her time, one from when my playing days were. And this job is 24/7, 365 days a year, near enough. And therefore, to be fair to the family, and always have this family first motto, and to be fair to the club, I've let the chief exec and the chairman know that I'm stepping down, as I say, from a role that I've thoroughly enjoyed and love.
Well, Surrey legend Alex Stewart will be leaving the role after 11 years in the role of director of cricket at Surrey, three county championship titles. I don't know what defines an era, but I think Gareth Batty will be the first to admit that Alex Stewart leaving Surrey will be the end of an era and a very special one. But was it unexpected? Does it come as a shock?
I think it's been in the background for a little while with some family reasons, but also he's not getting any younger. And the job is a ridiculously difficult job 24/7, particularly in the last few years. We've had a lot of different comings and goings, whether it be England calls or franchise calls. It makes for logistics and I suppose the bigger picture of keeping players comfortable and happy and informed of what's going on, pretty difficult. And just what you touched on at the start, I mean, Stu is a legend as a player, an absolute great of the game, which goes without saying. But to have done what he's done in a relatively short period of time, and put us, and you know, when he leaves at the end of the year, would have left us in a far better place than when he came in. So the full-on great legend, whatever superlative you want to throw around, that is Alex Stewart when it comes to certainly his career, and then what he's just done in the last period of time, what is it, 10, 11 years at Surrey as director of cricket.
Be amazing, the overload bats, wouldn't it? Without Alex Stewart, Mickey Stewart, Al's been there since 1981. So, you know, Mickey's been there since, I think, 1881. So, you know, the family of the Stewart family, I mean, it's been ridiculous what great servants have been to that club.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, you know, people throw a legacy around and the banded nature of it. But I actually think that whether Alec or Mickey are in the building, they're always in the building, if that makes sense. And I think that is the legacy piece. They are so instrumental. They are the DNA of the club, for wanting not to throw too many cliches out there. Everything when Mickey was around would have gone through him. Everything while Stewie's been around Alec, it's gone through him. And you can't replace that. I think that's the thing we have to get our heads around. We can't replace Alec Stewart. Before he took the job, he came with Alec Stewart, the great cricketer. Now he leaves this role, Alec Stewart, the great director of cricket. It is, you cannot replace that. So you have to get your head around that first and foremost. And then you work on how you can manipulate where we're at to try and cover off certain parts of his role that somebody can do. There are other parts that you can't replace. So you've just got to find a solution to what we're going to do moving forward.
Well, sir, two ways to transition from somebody like him. I mean, it happened with Alec Ferguson at Manchester United, I suppose. But you either have somebody who comes in and says, we're making a clean break from the past, I'm going to do it my way, or it's the gentle transition. And Alex always around to be called upon for advice and opinion. And given that he's announced his retirement with a year to go, am I right to assume that it will be that sort of gentle transition and that he will be there to help the new man through?
Yeah, I mean, look, it would be wrong to start barracking Stewie now and trying to railroad him into something, what it looks like when he does step down from the role. Let's hope. I think the want and the hope for the club is that lots of things run incredibly well. We're in a very good place. We never take it for granted, like gets thrown at us, that, you know, we're the Jazz Hatters and we've got this and we've got that. That is absolutely not the case. And that's fine that people say that. We quite like it. It's quite a nice thing. But we know that things, certainly from an on-field and recruitment and the way the club is set up, is in a very fine place. Anybody that can come in and change that and make it for the better, poof, I'll walk away now as well, no problem. I think that's going to be a very difficult thing to do. So I think we have to let Alec process his decision hopefully we can talk him into some capacity, Ferguson-like, and he would like to be bandied around in those sort of circles, absolutely, and so he should be. The moving forward part, we have to let the dust settle a little bit. But like I said before, you can't replace some of the things that Alex Stewart does. Only he can do. I can't think of a name in world cricket that can come in. And we've genuinely sat around the table and said, look, you know, throw out some names. There is not a person we have come across who realistically we could get that can cover off what Alex does, because he knows the club inside out, which is first and foremost, probably one of the most important things. And then also having the greatness attached to your name and the dynasty of family. Good luck replacing that.
And what an incentive to go and win three titles in a row for, you know, to sign him off.
Yeah, it's been said, Helmy. we just said to the boys, look, you know, we're not stupid. The expectation is big at our place, and so it should be. But then it's kind of, right, we've said it, we've made the statements, now let's move forward in the correct manner. And the correct manner is to keep working hard on each day, individuals to get better, and stick to our process that we know works. And we're the hunted at the minute, not the hunter, which is a very nice place to be if you're ahead of the people chasing you. And we believe we're making some small interventions, and we're trying to be on the front foot so that people are constantly trying to chase what we've done and how we've moved forward.
And finally, Bats, I know you're very proud of the fact that you used over 20 players in both seasons in which you won the championship. Yeah, you know, big squad, lots of rotation. I think you're just about to play a friendly against Sussex down in Hove, which is a bizarre thought because it still feels a bit like winter. But how are preparations going? And is it going to be much the same? Lots of faces in the championship?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, when Alec brought the news the other day, it's a bit of a bombshell. So we've had a few days to talk it through and see where we're at, but preparations in general, everybody's, touch wood, pretty healthy, which most squads can't say that. They have some injuries flying around. So from a medical and a strength and conditioning point of view, we're in a good place. I feel like we're starting to set the standards, and we've got more things to increase on. Skill-wise, it goes without saying, we have a very fine skilled squad. And, you know, the expectation is to go on again. But the thing that everybody calls rest and rotation is a little bit, we change it. We call it a pit stop, just like Formula One. You're just in the garage changing some tires, and you're in, if that makes sense, but you might not be physically in. And I think that's what we get as a buy-in, as a group, both players and staff. I think we realise that we're about to start in a couple of weeks' time the buy-in that is required. And Harmy knows as well as anybody that buy-in required to get over the line and win championships and T20s and whatever else going on. I think we have that. But with all those wonderful things, we don't do it as a team, we're going to be nowhere. So we have to keep buying in as a group. And I think we should finish with the great man. It's a lovely little thing if we can send the great Alex Stewart off with a three in a row. And then hopefully we can talk him round to just hanging around a little bit longer.
Well, Bats, he did joke that he might be back in 2 weeks because his wife will be bored of him at home. But I don't think it'll ever be more than a semi-retirement, will it?
No, he's a workaholic, and that's why he's the best in the business. And I think that's why he's irreplaceable. That sort of work ethic doesn't come around very often.
Hey, thanks for your time. Good luck in Hove.
Cheers, man.
That was the one and only Gareth Batty, TalkSport commentator and head coach of Surrey. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll be joined by ESPN Crick Info's assistant editor, Matt Roller, to look back at the 100 draft. And we'll discuss the future of Surrey opener Jason Roy after he was one of a number of big, high-profile players who was overlooked and unsold.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you've missed any of the show or you want to catch up, you can download the podcast, the whole thing, from the Following On feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Right, as promised at the top of the show, we're joined by ESPN Cricket Info's assistant editor Matt Roller to discuss, actually, lots of news to come out of the 100 draft. There are plenty of headlines. Jason Roy, David Warner, Babar Azam not being picked, not being bought. People seem to be quite surprised about that. But I wonder, Matt, whether they should have been. Hello. Thank you very much for your time. Good to see you again.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me, as always. I suppose, Manas, in answer to your question, I suppose there's still a bit of an uneasy conflict in terms of the difference between what the ECB and the tournament might want and then what the coaches and the analysts that actually pick the teams might want, and that the ECB would probably much rather have big names and celebrity appeal from the players that go at the top of the 100 draft, whereas coaches and analysts generally care about whether or not they're going to win. And in the case of Jason Roy, for example, they see him enter with a reserve price of 100 grand. They look at his stats across the last two seasons where he's averaged 13 in the 100 for Oval Invincibles, and they think actually that's probably not going to be bang for our buck come sort of late July when the tournament gets underway. So, you know, teams have always, and we're seeing this across franchise cricket, really prioritised availability and make sure that players actually turn up. So it is understandable why certain players have gone unsold, even if there are obviously some big names who haven't been picked up, which might at surface level raise some eyebrows.
Matt, Jason's the big one for me, because how he gets, and I know the 100's after the, you know, the T20 World Cup, but it's, he's not in the not in the IPL. It's how does he get back into the England fold, if he gets back into England fold at all? Because at the minute you've got Salt, Jacks, Butler, for me, in pole position for that number one and number two spot, and Butler obviously is going to play, so it's between Salt and Jacks. How does Jason get into that, the reckoning and the conversation?
Well, it's a tricky one, Harmy. I think my personal view is that as soon as Roy had that second back spasm in the lead up to the World Cup, which sort of rendered him, in Rob Key's view, unselectable, I saw that as his England career probably being done, because we'd already seen Phil Salt and Will Jacks get some opportunities, and they obviously played that series against Ireland at the end of last summer. They're both of an age in their sort of mid-20s where they really start, they need to start getting those opportunities that they probably haven't had because of England's success in white ball cricket for so long. And sadly with Jason, he's obviously not had such a great time of it since the 2019 World Cup, and particularly the last couple of years, his form has fallen away a fair bit. He's still only 33, so it would be foolish to completely write him off from that. But this feels to me, his involvement in Major League and him not playing some of the blast for Surrey in all likelihood, and potentially, you know, his Major League commitments, he would only have missed a game or two of the 100, but I'm sure would have played some part in teams' decisions not to pick him up. All of that to me signals that Jason Roy is becoming sort of increasingly peripheral within the context of English cricket and the English summer. If you're a Surrey fan who's watched Jason Roy for the last 10-15 years at the Oval, you might only have the opportunity to watch him a handful of times this year, which is surprising and I suppose sad from their point of view. But that said, I suppose it's the natural evolution of these things. And yeah, maybe we'll be looking back on Jason Roy's career in a couple of years' time, and he'll obviously always be associated with that 2019 World Cup win, and will go down as an important, a seminal figure in English cricket, I'm sure.
As far as the marketeers are concerned, the big names there are plenty of them there. There's quite a sprinkling of West Indian stardust, isn't there, with Russell Hetmyer, Nicholas Puran, Pollard, Akhila Sain, Rodman Powell. So that's, that I think they're backsides on seats kind of players. And in the women's game, actually, how good was it to have all of the Australian women available? Meg Lanning, Beth Mooney, amongst plenty of big name Australian women.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's an instant vindication for the ECB's decision to raise the salaries at the top of the women's game, because some of those Australians haven't, especially in the era of the WPL, and earning way more than they can earn anywhere else through that. Some of the Australians didn't bother putting themselves in last year and haven't played that much of the 100. But this year, you really do have the top talent, you know, Beth Mooney, Meg Lanning, Annabelle Sutherland, Ash Gardner, all involved in it. From the men's point of view, I think, again, probably a rare opportunity to give some credit to the ECB in that there were, and to someone involved in cricket scheduling, because we bang on so much about how bad the schedule is in this line of work, and it generally is. But there was some rare forward thinking in that the ECB made sure that their dates didn't clash with the Caribbean Premier League this year. For I think the first time in the hundreds, now into its fourth season, I think it'll be the first time that it doesn't clash with the CPL. And lo and behold, that means the teams actually want to sign some of those Caribbean power hitters that you listed off there. And as you say, that's probably a good example of things working well from both the marketing point of view and the quality of cricket point of view, because any tournament that's got Nicholas Puran, Andre Russell, Rothman Powell is going to be pretty strong, and certainly looks like, you know, we've had a couple of positions in the past few years where it's fairly, I don't want to say random, but sort of county players who haven't necessarily played much international cricket have gone at the top of the draft just due to availability and that sort of thing, whereas this time the most of the top 125 grand spots in the men's draft did go to overseas players rather than uncapped England players. And I personally think in terms of the competition's profile, that has to be a good thing.
Matt, how does the 100 get better? You know, it's no secret that, you know, on this show, I've not been the biggest fan of the competition. I'm giving it the name. I'm not giving it its former title. I'm giving it the proper name of the 100. How does it get better? I thought last year was really good. I hated it for the first 2 years. I thought it was a bang average competition. But I thought last year, because of the injection of more fast bowlers in it, I thought it was better. How does it get better fourth year, fifth year, and on?
Well, I think it's really interesting looking at this year. A lot of people almost seem to be viewing it as like a holding year for it, which wouldn't necessarily be a good thing, in my opinion. But because of the fact that we know there are these discussions ongoing between the ECB and the counties about, do we need private investment? Do we need a Northeast team? Do we need a Southwest team? Do we even need a third London team? I think has been floated at various points. Because these discussions are going on so prominently, it almost feels like this is the 100 treading water for a season, which isn't really what you want. You want constant growth if you're running a tournament like this. The other challenge this year is that the England men's test players will miss the first week because there's a clash with the game, the third test against the West Indies. And I thought one of the big triumphs of last year was that there was that gap in the schedule after the Ashes. Obviously, people had a week or two off, but having players who were front and centre in the Ashes then coming back and playing a role in the tournament was a really positive thing for it, which perhaps will happen this year, but maybe with a bit more lag. You know, for example, can you see Ben Stokes playing in the 100 in a gap between England test series? Probably not. If he does, it'll be for a handful of games at most, I'd expect. So that's a bit of a challenge for it. Personally, I think the route that seems like the favourite at the moment, which is that the teams are opened up to private investment and the governance structure changed so that the counties can invest themselves a bit more, I think that is the right route. I think, clearly there are concerns about the potential loss of control and selling off parts of the English summer to Indian investors. But I think that's the way they've got to go, because to attract the best players more regularly, you have to have more money than the competition currently does. And I think, you know, people are used to running teams. We've seen, you know, Manners will know better than anyone that the SA20 has seemed like a real success in its first couple of years. And I think a large part of that has been IPL ownership. And I think a lot of people in the UK would be quite excited by the prospect of, you know, a Manchester Knight Riders team or something along those lines. So, yeah, that's my personal view. But, yeah, I feel like there's an uneasy compromise in terms of how the 100 is run currently. And I feel like more money will probably be a good thing for it in the short term.
Matt, I'm going to ask you a question that we could do a whole hour's program on. But Army and I have been talking for the last couple of years. We thought it was just a matter of time before the 100 became a normal T20 tournament and the franchises were sold to largely Indian investors. I mean, we and then the SA20 happened, and then Army and I have been saying, you see, there it is. That's the blueprint. That's where the 100's going to go. And we're kind of out of time, but a short answer if you can.
Yeah, I suppose the format is a question in and of itself. I think quite a lot of people have said similar things in terms of the structure of the competition, and might well be about to be proved right in the next 18 months or so. We'll see some decisions made before too long. And yeah, on the format, I suppose there's still this attempt to have a point of difference from the T20, the Vitality Blast that the counties play in. But you know, I don't think it would make a huge difference to the competition if you flipped it overnight to T20. I think it might even make it slightly better.
That's what Army and I thought. Matt, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. It's always great to have you on the show, and really appreciate your hard work and your insight.
Not at all. Thanks for having me, guys.
That was ESPN Cricket Info's assistant editor, Matt Roller. You're listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, along with Durham Hall of Famer Steve Harmison. And a reminder that you can now watch us, if you're not doing so already, on YouTube. Just head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and subscribe. Now, an old friend of the show, Derbyshire head of cricket, Mickey Arthur, was speaking a little earlier on with Luke Poulton-Hyde.
Yeah, look, he phoned me yesterday. I quite understand where he's at with it. Yeah, he wants another World Cup, and I totally get that. The one thing that's good is with the PCB, you always have a contingency. So I have a contingency in place. You have to when you deal with the PCB. But it is disappointing. Hopefully, and there's still a little bit of water to go under the bridge on that one yet. But we'll have him for our last six Vitality Blast games, which potentially could be the big ones. So it is what it is, and we'll recover well. Very confident with the squad we've got, so we'll be fine.
I was going to say, I'm sure you're confident with the bowlers that you have got, but is there any replacements in the lineup on the horizon?
Maybe? Yeah. No, we will certainly replace Amir. We've got obviously Blair Tickner coming, Chappell, Connors, both outstanding. Pat Brown's given us another dimension. Nick Potts is getting better all the time. Ben Aitchison hopefully in the next couple of months is going to be ready to go. So we have a nice smorgasbord of quick bowlers, but we'll certainly add one to that stable.
In relation to this, as a coach, how do you handle it when players have to go off to like different competitions and like you're missing them for a game or two? How do you handle that?
Well, it's just the cricket landscape now. Yeah, and generally you've planned for it. You know, if you know beforehand, you've prepared for it, you've planned for it, and I think the key to that is backing every one of the players that you have. So I back every one of our players in that dressing room, and I know if you throw them the baton, they will take that baton and run with it. They'll be ready, and they'll be ready to go out and perform for you. So, you know, it's just you take it in your stride, plan properly, get enough depth, and you should be fine.
What are your goals for this year? Obviously, to win games, but like, what are your goals for players and individuals? Maybe
I think I've said a lot of times. If we're having this conversation end of September again, and we've been promoted to Division One, I would be extremely, extremely happy, because that shows that over 6 months we've played consistently well. I know that we have a white ball team that on its day can beat any team in the country. I'm confident that we'll be there and thereabouts in our white ball team. And then it's about just understanding what happens on the day. Mm-hmm. We've got to get ourselves to a quarter final. We're one game away from finals day, and then who knows after that. Mm-hmm. And then the 50 overs, depending on who we've got, we'll look to win that as well. So it's always hard to... I think as a coach, for me, it is... player improvement. So if I see our players grow, our players get better, our players put themselves in positions to win us games of cricket, and then their ability to take those match-winning moments and making them proper for us, that fills me with pride and joy. So hopefully we've had a bit of those. we're a Division One county come September.
On relation to the England Test match, there was a tweet released by the cricketer that stated that it was unfair for the young spinners of Tom Hartley and Bashir and Rehan Ahmed to, quote, carry the can of a domestic league that doesn't work. What was your thoughts on that and your opinions on their statement?
Well, my opinions on that was it didn't take them long to start criticising the county championship. When England were playing well, nobody spoke about the county championship. And then they criticised it the minute it didn't go right, which I thought was unfair. And you know, we've got young Jack Morley here this year. You know, we're going to give him opportunity, because I do think that for England to become that test team that we want them to be, mm-hmm. and they're very, very good, that is one area that they do need to improve, because you've got to go and play in the subcontinent. You've got to win in the subcontinent to be the best team in the world. So as long as we can develop a spinner for them, those spinners are allowed to grow and allowed to develop, England will get it right.
Why is it you think the county championship does get the blame like straight away when something goes wrong? Why is that?
Well, I think it's just because it's just the kicking can all the time. Mm. You know, I've been in domestic systems around the world now. South Africa, Australia, Sri Lanka, Pakistan. I've seen it. I've coached in the West Indies, in Bangladesh. I've been all over. The county championship still attracts your best overseas players. They want to come and play here. Young players growing up in other countries want to come and be part of the county championship, and I wanted to come and coach in it. Coaches want to come and coach in it because it's a very, very good system. I think it does get unfairly tainted at times.
That was Mickey Arthur talking to Luke Poulton-Hyde. Mohammed Amir has been the subject of much conversation, having announced that he won't be rejoining Derbyshire, and he's unretiring from international cricket. Quality cricketer, Harmy, but you just sort of wonder perhaps whether that boat has sailed for him.
Yeah, you would have thought so. You would have thought that ship sailed a long time ago, but to bring Mohammed Amir back, I think they must be, you know, struggling for bowlers, which I don't know enough about Pakistan cricket, whether it's the right thing to bring Mohammed Amir back or not. But like you said, I thought that ship sailed a long, long time ago, and I expect him to be at Derbyshire this year. But he's not. Somebody else will have a chance. It's great to see Mickey Arthur. Whether you were on one side of the fence here, and you know, he had feet in both camps, and did he give his full attention to both jobs? But he's now at Derbyshire full-time, and I would imagine Derbyshire will have a very, very good season this year, even with without Mohammed Amir.
All right, I mean, just before we get on to the final word, which might take a few minutes because I've got about three or four options, a quick word on Sam Curran. I don't know how many times we've spoken about what is Sam Curran, what is his best role. Well, it seems that the Punjab Kings have decided that he's a number four batter who bowls a bit. We'll see how the bowling goes, Sam. We'll try you out. It may be your day or may not be, but you're going to bat four for us. So they've decided what he is.
Yeah, they've decided what he is. And it's always the same when you look at domestic or franchise cricket and you see somebody playing a role, and he never plays that role for England. He'll never play that role for England, because England have got a number four batter who bowls a bit, and he's just started bowling again, and that he's called Ben Stokes. And I love Sam, but he's not Ben Stokes. You know, it's like saying to anyone in first-class cricket, you go and play seven first-class matches at the start of season, go and get some runs, but you need to bat number one, two, three, or five, because there's no way in the world you're getting in front of Joe Root at number four for England. So I think that's the thing for Sam. It's great to see him scoring runs. Like we've mentioned, I'm a massive, massive Sam Curran fan. I just don't know where to fit in the team half the time. I think he's under pressure for England. I think World T20 coming up, I think Sam Curran's under pressure. So he needs a good tournament. And that will do him, not only him, the world of good, it'll do England the world of good. Because if Sam Curran comes off the back of a good IPL, he gives us a chance of World T20. So, but I think at this minute in time, from an England point of view, I think his place is in question. Whether that number seven opening the bowling, possibly bowling at the death, I think Sam needs a good IPL just to make sure he goes on a plane, but he goes into the 11 full of confidence, because England are going to need him in the World T20 in June.
All right, I mean, my outstanding final word is Winindu Hasaranga and the Sri Lanka cricket and that situation. I just want to mention the ongoing feud. We should call it a series or a tour between Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, but it just seems to be getting worse and worse. The bad blood shows no end to its flow between those two teams. Jimmy Anderson is now the last remaining player, active player, from the 2003 World Cup following the retirement of Kenyan all-rounder Collins Abuya. So, tremendous shot. Collins Abuya, also a 23-year international career. But Wanindu Hasaranga gets done for abusing an umpire and he's facing an inevitable ban. But before that ban comes, or that suspension comes, he unretires from Test cricket, gets a four-match ban. Instead of serving it at the T20 World Cup in America, he then is banned from two tests, the format he retired from a year ago. And then Sri Lanka cricket say, we didn't exploit a loophole. No, you die through the loophole, head first, playing the trumpet. And you know what? That's what loopholes are for.
Absolutely. That is what loopholes are for. And I've got no problem with that. You know, if you can sort of play the system, that's fine. I've got no issue with that. It was hilarious. Because I seen the headline, I was like, what's he coming out of retirement for? He's got no interest in playing Test cricket the way he spoke about it. And then when you put two and two together and don't come with five, which I normally get, he's done it brilliantly. Oh, fair play to him. That was hats off. If you're gonna, like I say, if there are loopholes there, like you say, exploit them. So he's huge for them in the World T20. I would imagine in about fortnight, 2 or 3 weeks' time, we might see a headline on TalkSport breaking news that Hasaranga has retired again from Test match cricket without bowling a ball. That would not be a surprise.
Oh, well, okay. The final word then goes to Khalid Ahmed, who tried to run Sri Lankan batter Kamindu Mendis out at the non-striker's end, the act which used to be called a mankad. And he missed the stumps.
If you're going to do it properly. It's like I got drunk at the weekend and I got proper drunk. And I mean, my head was bouncing on Sunday morning. So if you're going to do it properly, for God's sake. So if you are going to make yourself look like a clown, at least do, you know, go through the process in the right order. So the funny thing was, he didn't even mask the fact that, or hide the fact that he was going to do it. His run-up was a lot slower. He slowed right down when he got to the stumps. And then he missed the stumps completely. Well, fair play, but it was a not out of 10 for effort, try, execution. No, if you're going to do it properly, make sure you do it properly or don't do it at all.
Right, you've been listening to Following On here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you've missed any of the show or you want to catch up, you can download the podcast from the Following On feed. Available as always via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back with more next week, where we'll hear from both Surrey and Hampshire camps ahead of the new season. But for now, this has been another edition of Following On.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.